Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Very fine, thank you. I was discussing with the Cat and Doug leading into your segment, Yadier Molina's Instagram post, which was, now it's time for me to move on. It was like an image. And then that was posted around 12 o'clock St. Louis time, about 3 hours before game time. And then about 90 minutes after posting it, he took it down. Any insight into what that was all about?
Yeah, I asked him about it, and he said that, you know, it had nothing to do with baseball. It was something personal that he didn't want to go into. And he asked that it be, you know, he said, look, it's just something personal. It's something that meant something to me. It was a music lyric, but he didn't elaborate on why. But he saw the reaction to it and recognized that people were thinking that it had to do with baseball and not some other thing that he was talking about or whatever personal meaning it had for him. And so he decided to take it down so that people wouldn't misconstrue it as related to the way, what he told me is that he goes, it has nothing to do with what's going on in here. He meant the clubhouse.
Yeah.
And he said as soon as people started taking it that way, he recognized that, yeah, it was not something he wanted to elaborate on, but he also didn't want people to take it the wrong way, so he deleted it.
Well, there you go.
There it is.
Carlos Martinez.
Yeah. I thought he was leaving the team.
Ooh. Carlos Martinez has toned it down on Twitter, too, hasn't he?
That was a couple years ago. He figured out the favorites were public.
Yeah. That's a long time ago, Doug.
Well, clearly he has toned it down then.
The
he has. No, he has continued.
So therefore, Doug's statement was accurate, right. Derek.
No, Doug, you nailed it.
I thought I did.
No, I mean, hey, you know, how's 2014 going for you?
Ooh.
Damn, Gina.
Damn, Gina. So is Brian Pena coming back today? As if so, I guess that means that's it for Eric Fryer, who did whatever they asked him.
It could be another day for him.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they can push it off another day. He did really well. Eric Fryer did a lot of good things, except for play a lot. I mean, he was a trusted and valued member of the roster for a long time here, for almost half the season, but he only had 4 complete games at catcher. So, the reason why they signed Brian Pena was so that Yadier Molina would have, you know, more time, more breaks, more time off, that they would be more willing to start somebody else and, you know, could offer some offense, could offer some, veteran savvy and experience behind the plate and all those things. I thought he played well when he did play. He just didn't play all that much. And I think there's a legitimate question, well, will Pena play all that much? So, you know, I don't know. I think we'll see that. But yesterday was the 20th day of his rehab assignment, so he's done. And then they got to make a decision now on his roster status by tomorrow.
Well, they scored 11 runs and hit all the home runs yesterday. Kind of masked the fact that Jaime Garcia had a bit of a rough outing. What do you see going on with him?
I do think the old phrase that we hear all the time, oh, he got better as a guy later. I do think he that happened. I think, they're early on. He doesn't give up a run. If a double play is turned, that's on him. You know, he spiked the ball on the way to second. If that's a good throw to second, then that's a double play turned. There's another ball that got through that if that's an out, then he has a cleaner inning. I think, he just kind of, he's a guy who, and we hear it a lot, and we can see it too when he pitches. He's got a lot of movement on his pitches, and Fryer was dancing around quite a bit there in the first couple innings. And then in the Mariners, when they laid off and realized, okay, well, this guy's got to put it over the plate before swing at it, they had some success. And then, third, fourth inning, he started dialing it in. And I thought he pitched pretty well from there, just to, exhausted his pitch count, but also had gotten in trouble with, again, just a few things that got through. I mean, the two singles he came up that then Seegers came in and allowed the home run, but the two singles that Garcia came up, one of them was just kind of a flip shot that became a base hit. So I thought he pitched better the later he got into the game. And I think he's had just a series of those where he's not dialed in for a stretch, a little bit like Leak. You know, Leak had a real hard time here, but, you know, had, let's see, a ground ball get through a shift. Well, two balls go through where infielders weren't shifted, had another play not made that led to a few other opportunities for the Mariners. So I think he and Garcia are pretty similar, Doug, in the sense that, you know, they've had games where they're just not quite as sharp, and those games have been compounded recently by plays not made behind them.
And apparently Rosenthal is no longer the closer. We haven't discussed that since
no
we talked
longer.
To him. How do you expect they'll handle that?
Well, O was going to close yesterday, and I would imagine O is going to get the first crack at closing. You know, Seagrass goes in yesterday, elevates a fastball against, you know, an interesting thing is, you know, Franklin Gutierrez is not exactly a guy that a lot of teams are rushing to get lefties against. He hits lefties pretty well. He hits lefties very well, as a matter of fact. His slugging percentage against lefties is about the same as his OPS against righties. So, you know, I mean, he did what he should do, or what he has done against lefties, and put a ball out of the park. So, but they look at matchups in that sense. They'll look at, all right, if the ninth inning is coming around and it's a couple of lefties coming up, you might see Seagrass in that role. But, you know, it seems to be trending more towards Ogut's first crack. He was going to get the first crack yesterday. Mike said if there's another opportunity coming in the next few days, O will probably be lined up again for that save. And if he does in the ninth what he's been doing in the eighth, it's hard to imagine that any of those other guys, Broxton or Seagrass, the two other guys being considered for closing, that they would move into that. It would have to take an O falter or some kind of matchup thing that Mike couldn't ignore for those two guys to get the saves before O does.
Matheny also said that he was moving Rosenthal out of the closer role for a little while until he gets going again. So how does he get it going again, and what role will there be short term for Rosenthal?
That is a great question, Kat. And when he did say we're going to give him a different role for a little while, and I asked later on, a few of us did, you know, kind of some follow-up questions about that, and, you know, saying, all right, well, is this a temporary thing? And Mike said it doesn't have to be. You know, he said Rosenthal is not going to – he's going to have a different role. He's going to have a different assignment. What that assignment is, they're still trying to work on it, probably middle relief, maybe with a big lead. Maybe you'll see him in some of the spots where you would have seen Bowman, just away from the ninth. You saw Bowman last night with a big lead, and handle an inning. You could see how, if that had happened earlier in the game, or if that happens earlier in the game, over the next few days, you'll see Rosenthal in that spot. They wanted to give him a day, and then and they'll start trying to look for those spots. But as far as the temporary thing, Mike said you don't know. You don't want to make a false promise to a guy and say, look, you know, we're going to look at this for a little while. We trust that you get right, and then when you're right, you got your job back. He said that's not fair to the guy, because what if, you know, in the interim, something quote-unquote special happens? What if somebody, you know, takes over and just runs away with the role, and then, you know, Rosenthal's right, but he's not the best option for the night. And all of a sudden you got to go to him and say, look, things have changed. He said better to be honest with him and say, look, just focus on being the dominant pitcher, and, you know, when you're back to being yourself, we'll see how things shape up. We'll take a look at who else is there, and you're going to have to trust us that, you know, you can have a prominent role. It might not be the role you left, because there might be somebody who took over for it. And, I mean, we already have seen evidence of that, Cat, you know, this season. That's what happened to Johnny Peralta. When he returned, his job wasn't waiting for him because, quote-unquote, something special happened.
Yeah, and with Rosenthal, I mean, there's no getting around it. His last 7-8 appearances have been a disaster. I still think he's a really good pitcher and can mm-hmm. be again. It's just sometimes with closers, that's a difficult thing to work your way back, regardless if someone else jumps in and takes that spot.
I agree, and I mean, and what he's having a problem with, I talked to some folks, you know, I went to talk to Steve Cishek about it, and I talked to Jonathan Broxton about it. These guys have both been, you know, once and former closers. Broxton was an all-star closer with the Dodgers. Cishek was one of the more effective and, you know, just unpleasant closers to face in baseball when he was with Miami. And then both of them didn't have their closing role anymore. Cishek, you know, is back with the Mariners as a closer after being non-tendered by the Cardinals. The Cardinals let him go, didn't put him on the playoff roster. And, you know, shortly after he became a free agent and hit the open market, the Mariners called him up and said, "We see something in you. We'd like to offer you $10 million and the closer job," right, like that. So it's a very volatile role, and it's a very tricky role, like you say, when you're walking guys. Cishek walked guys. Broxton had stretches where he walked guys, and now Rosenthal has walked 21 guys, which is four off his total from last season. And I mean, it's about 120 fewer batters, or 160 fewer batters he's faced. So his walk rate has just grown exponentially. And to go into a game with a three or fewer run lead and try to figure out how to get your command, it can be a problematic assignment. You know, the stuff that you do on the side, he doesn't have a bullpen like starters do between appearances because they need him to make those appearances. So it can be a tricky thing, and it wouldn't be a shock if, you know, they use this opportunity, if they have it, to kind of have him do some stuff on the side. But, I was told also a few times that when it comes to a reliever, it's not mechanics. It's usually mental. And sometimes that just takes a break. Sometimes it just takes a new view, meaning another inning or another type of role. And sometimes it just takes something that just clicks. And then the confidence returns, and so do the strikes and the walks stop. And, you know, in Cishek's case, it took somebody showing faith in him and some additional strength that he worked on. But it also took an off season where he could just go, okay, look, all that is gone. Time to start over and believe in the confidence that the Mariners are showing me by taking this role.
Derek Gould, our guest on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Tim McKernan, Jimmy the Cat Hayes, Douglas Sullivan Vaughn with you on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. We've seen fans run on the field before, but I don't believe we've ever seen it in which the fan times the jump perfectly.
Weird, yeah.
And then runs in between the left fielder and the center fielder. Is it Seth Smith and Leonis Martin? And right as Matt Carpenter hits a ball to the opposite field, the fan is splitting through there and runs through him. Now, I know the television networks can't show it, but you were there, so you got a chance to see it. What in the world went on there?
Yeah, that was a weird spot of the ballpark, because that's also where Tommy Pham elected to take his hat off to shield the sun. So there that was an odd little area of the ballpark this week. So it looked like it had that perception that the fan had this impeccable timing, right? But he had already there was a discussion of whether it was a male or female. So we'll just go with the fan.
it looked to me, I'm not kidding, I only saw briefly, but it looked like Richard Simmons ran on the field.
Doug, was that Richard Simmons?
No, you would have noticed the shorts if it was Richard Simmons.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think that was because there was an American flag attire. I don't know. I saw, I don't know, I didn't really get a good, I was in the press box, so I was behind home plate. Didn't exactly, break out the binoculars to check out what the fan was wearing.
Doug would have.
No. Good well, that's point, why yeah. Doug is a serious journalist,
that's
to
right.
quote you, Kat. And,
yeah, clip that off.
And I cover baseball. The fan had jumped the wall as the pitch was being made or right around that time. So it's just a complete, fluke that the ball goes straight toward him. But that was fascinating because, you had Smith then make the play without running into the fan. And then the play continue with Tommy Pham tagging up at second and taking third, which, to be candid, I'm not sure he does if everybody's not all fixated on the security guards and the fan all of a sudden running on the field as an active play is going on. And Smith throws it in, but no one's quite sure. Is this a pause in play? What are we doing here? Fan takes third, and then the fan was tackled very quickly. You know, there was not some of the Bo Jackson Tecmo Bowl runaround that you sometimes see with these fans. But they just absolutely took him down quickly, and then escorted the fan off the field.
Doug, we're still not sure on the fans. No, I'm looking at a very close picture on Deadspin, and I can't tell either.
Yeah, I mean, that was the topic of conversation. Well, there were two topics of conversation here. One was, what the heck is supposed to happen there? What if the fan had interrupted, had gotten, in Smith's way or had tried to make the play? What happens then? Is that fan interference? Does he get a double? Is that a dead ball? Did he just do it over? No one knew, and then the other part of it was the fan, male or female. Mm.
Looks like, based on the image on Deadspin, there's some hair on the legs proper.
Yeah.
Now that again doesn't necessarily eliminate female possibilities.
No.
I had a camp counselor in sixth grade by the name of Joey, but she was a woman. Yeah. She had hairy legs.
Hairy legs.
Right. That was at 40
this
Legends.
This is really
40
your
Legends.
Area of expertise, Tim.
Right.
So.
Now, this is my bailiwick, Derek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I really wish you would have been here for us to, because we could have, I could have gone and asked Yachty about his Instagram post while you worked on this.
See, these are the two stories St. Louisans want to hear answers.
Boy, if you guys teamed up.
Can you imagine?
I assume this
it
person
would
be
Woodward and Bernstein.
Yep.
No. Woodward and Bernstein.
Yep.
Definitely.
Two Missouri Journalism School products, Doug. J School to you.
Yep.
Yeah. I assume this person was arrested.
That's what they call it while the movie. They would call the movie All the Truman's Men.
Take that.
I was going to say, I assume this person was arrested, and we could probably find out today what it was.
What it was.
There would be a fine. I mean, it's trespassing. That's usually. It's up to local statutes. I can tell you that much, Doug. I do know, having been through this and done some reporting in this regard, it is up to local statutes, city statutes, and most of the time, the law regarding fans running onto a playing field is considered trespassing, and the violation is described therein, often either a fine or. Minimal jail time, that kind of stuff.
Cardinals and Royals this week, Derek. Both teams, 39 and 35. The Royals and both the Cardinals. It's kind of, middle of the road at this point. I don't know.
So you expect both of them to leave 41 and 37.
Yeah, so therefore they'll inevitably be a split. I assume the sports talk hosts in Kansas City are doing the thing where they insult St. Louis and rally up the...
Oh, it's so cute.
It is cute. I guess it's a rivalry week on one side of the state. As far as the Royals go, what do you think?
They have the trophy, Tim. Isn't that important to you?
Yeah, you would think the World Championship would kind of settle everybody down, but I guess it's still going on. Are they, what do you think of that team this year?
I was impressed that they won last year. I expected a correction of sorts last year, and it didn't happen. They played well. I think in some ways, they're not the pitching staff that they had last year. That's part of it. I think their division is better. That's part of it. And they're a little bit like the Cardinals. They're just not quite catching gear consistently. They play a little bit, then they slip. And a lot of that has to do with pitching. So, in some ways they are a mirror image of the Cardinals. Aspirations to contend, talent to do so, but not really the consistent run of success. Always kind of stubbing their toe, and a lot of times it's them stubbing their toe on pitching.
It's kind of like they're the Cardinals, but an extreme version, because they lose eight in a row, then they win six in a row, then they lose eight and nine.
Fair.
You know?
Yeah, you're right, Kat. That's a good way to put it. It's the oscillation of a team that. It stems from pitch, and it's what the Cardinals have the power to sort of win a game in there like they did yesterday. Man, if last year's team doesn't win a game like it did yesterday, I mean, we've seen a lot of games won with them just overwhelming an opponent with power, and that's not something that they've done since what, you know, the MV3 days, really, when you think about it. So you're right, and the Royals don't really have that.
So the power is remarkable. It's their second six home run game of the season, and if you go over their previous 15 years, they had a total of 2 6 home run games.
That's a good stat. I wish you would have been here to tell me that.
Maybe we all could have contributed.
Yeah,
We all should have been there. Derek Gould, Appliance Discounter phone lines, and of course, Post-Dispatch beat reporter for the Cardinals and co-host of the Writer's Block with Benjamin Hockman and Ben Fredericks. And Derek, always appreciate the time, sir. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Have a great day. Thanks for having me.